I just wanted to welcome all of you to MoMA and welcome Larry Sass to the museum as well. We're delighted to have him here for our second out of 3 open house tours. These tours basically allow a small group of people like yourselves to gather together and hear from the architect as we walk through the house, so we'll be spending about an hour together. If you're interested in hearing Larry again, along with the other 4 architects whose work is out on the lot, October 15th at 6:30, there is a panel discussion in one of our theaters, and they'll all be presenting on their work, and there'll be a discussion about that. So I welcome you to visit the information desk again afterwards and get tickets if you'd like. If not, well, we're all here and we're excited to go outside, and Larry will take us through.
Yeah, well, we should just head on now, and then I can talk to you later. Yeah, I had two primary students, but about 5 in total, 5-6 in total. Yeah, and somebody from the museum, I wish I could remember this woman's name, somebody came out and helped for a day.
Really?
Yeah, she picked up a rubber mallet and started hammering for a day. Yeah, it was awesome. That was wonderful. Well, thank you all of you for coming. This is really quite an honor to be able to explain some of this to a small group of people. So just give you a little bit of background. Oh, and by the way, you could stop me at any point. I'm a professor. I'm not a professional architect. My background is in architecture. I've worked in practice for about 8-9 years. So I'm used to teaching. So if anybody wants to blurt out a question or stop me or tell me that I'm wrong, that's fine. I'm used to it. And also makes the conversation a little more lively. So this... I should just tell you, out of all the projects, the thing that's most important to me is that they're all made by machinery. All of the projects are made with computer-controlled machines that are run by a computer. So, for example, the one in the middle was made by a very large computer, and a very large cutting machine, and it cut out all the panels. And mine was made by a common machine called a CNC machine, computer numerically controlled. And the machine was invented at MIT back in 1947 in the Parsons Lab. But the machines are common. IKEA's furniture is all made with these machines, and I used that to make this house. And the design of the house is supposed to be a New Orleans shotgun house, traditional shotgun house. Shotgun houses were all over the South. Texas has the largest population of shotgun houses. This shotgun house is a... a single shotgun. Even though we have 2 staircases, it's really meant to have 1 staircase. It has 2 staircases for the show. And some of the features on it are, for a shotgun house, it's supposed to be the facade, which is it's supposed to have a lot of ornamentation. The facade is also supposed to be the porch. New Orleans gets very hot. And if I opened all the windows, you'd see that the wind blows straight through. It's actually a very comfortable space when all the windows are open.
The model inside has painted painted blue, but this is not painted. The model in the house.
Oh, the model. Which part is painted blue?
The window.
It's painted blue. Okay. Which part? Up in the dormer?
The dormer.
Oh, okay. Well, I should explain technically what it is that model. And the question was that one of the components, I guess the eave of the house, is painted blue in the model and not in here. I'm not quite sure which part you're talking about, but... Okay. I've forgotten. So that model is supposed to be an identical replica of this building. Every part... Well, the way we made sure to it that every part fit, if you notice, every part has an attachment to another part. And the way we assured that every part would fit, there are 5,000 parts. The way we made sure they would fit is by testing each part by cutting all of the components on a laser cutter. A laser cutter is made about the size of a small table. It has an arm and a laser that burns through plywood or paper and cuts out all the parts. And that model was made with laser cut parts. And if you look at the model, you'll see the numbers correspond. And so to cut the real house, once we knew that that model fit together, we scale the model up, or scale the computer drawings up 6 times, and we cut the real parts, the big parts. And out of all 5,000 parts that arrived in 10 packages, only 2 were wrong out of 5,000, which is an amazing average. And that's, and I should tell you too, this is more of an academic project than it is a professional project. And the academics of this are all about trying to take a computer model that anyone can make and reduce that down to a small set of components, cut the components with a machine, ship them onto the site, and then put the parts together with no heavy machinery. So
this isn't meant to be realized?
I'm sorry?
This isn't meant to be realized in like a real life situation?
Yeah, it could be. But the whole point is, all of these houses are experiments. Most of them, like for example this one, even though it says that it can withstand certain things, it's still...
Except a bird.
Sorry?
Except a bird.
A bird flew through it?
Yeah. No, it's a plastic.
Oh, yes. Plastic, yes. It still has it's still an experiment. And this is, all of these I think are experiments, except for maybe the one in the middle and the small compact house.
Anything with code, anything with building codes?
I'm sorry?
Building codes.
Building codes, okay. Well, there are 2 building codes that this thing has to go through. One is structural, and the other one is energy. The structural one, anytime you do anything outside of traditional construction, requires a structural engineer. And a structural engineer certified this to withstand a 75-mile-an-hour wind with a 15-person occupancy. As far as energy goes, we didn't deal with energy because the goal was we're not going to heat this, or it's not going to be in a cold climate. It's meant for as a summer exhibit project. But if we were to insulate this, we would put insulation around the outside and then put shingles on it. But if we put shingles on it and covered it up and made it into a traditional house, you'd never be able to see the details. So if I take you around the back, I just want to show you some of the way it goes together, because I realize you won't be able to see it from the model. Yeah, a mallet and a sledgehammer. Yeah, so we used rubber mallets, sledgehammers, and one other tool, a crowbar, and clamps to put this together. That's it. We didn't use any power tools. We didn't use jacks or anything. We didn't use any heavy tools. And you could just look at the details and see how it's all held together. And majority of this is held together by friction. There's no... there's glue, but there's no real glue holding it together. It's held together by its own friction. And friction is, between 2 pieces of wood, it's better than friction between a nail and a piece of wood. If you take a nail and you measure the surface of a nail, that tells you how much area is going to be in contact between the two, hold the thing together. And with a nail, only the tip end of the nail holds the component together. And you could tell, because when you pry a nail out, it's always that first bit that's really hard, and then the rest of it comes out very fast, and it just slips right out, and you can pull it out with your hand once you get that little bit out. With friction and these surfaces, even though the tip end is the only part that's really holding everything together, you have a greater amount of surface holding the parts together. So to take this off, this took hundreds of pounds of force to get this on. To take this off, you would need hundreds of pounds of force in the same direction to pull every single panel off and every single small component out. So this is stronger than a traditional house. It's also stronger because each corner is a rigid corner. With the exception of these corners, a good example would be if you look at the plastic Y, this plastic piece here, the white one, you'll see that the floor, the part that goes into the floor, is also part of the same component. So that means that it would be almost impossible for me to break or shear all of these components the way it would with a traditional house, which is joined usually at that section with a piece of metal plate, with a metal plate. So it's a solid piece of material that's holding up the floor. To weather and fall apart?
Take down this house.
That's a good question. That's a very good question. I would say three people could take this apart in about 4 or 5 days.
4 or 5 days?
Yeah, with crowbars. Crowbars and rubber mallets.
And is that the reason the size of the panels that you use?
No, the size of the panels are based on the size of the machine. The machine is 4 foot by 8 foot, and no panel is bigger than 4 foot by 8 foot, which also means no panel is heavier than 65 pounds.
All right.
So you use joints and both of them?
Which one, these here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, over time, well, these joints, if this were for real, these joints would be held together by some other type of fastener, but they'll never completely come off. And none of them are straight, huh?
So they're protected with shingles.
Yeah, they're protected with shingles and another layer of, you've seen Tyvek, the plastic, another layer of plastic, so you wouldn't get water into this.
Is it hard to put together if it needs so much pressure?
Yeah, it's very difficult to put on. And that's probably the hardest part about this, is all of the panels, each one takes about a good 20 to 30 minutes to put on. And it's a tremendous amount of force to get it on. With rubber mallets and... Yeah, 4 pound metal mallets. Yeah, they're very hard to put on and they're very hard to take back off. Let me think of some other major points. So I should tell you, there was a language that we set up for this. If you think about, so we started with a computer model. Certainly, a lot of people here may have seen a 3D CAD model. Like if you look at any of the drawings or imagery on the website, those are all made with computer models, 3D computer models. And you can start off with a program like SketchUp, Google SketchUp, and you can make a very simple 3D model. Some of you have probably seen those. What we've done is we take a very simple 3D model and we cut it up into parts, subdividing that model into more and more parts. So a shape like this one here, this large piece of plastic, is maybe 6 or 7 operations in the computer. And the reason why that's so important is because if you think about... programs like Google search engines, what they figured out how to do is not just search out and take data, they also figured out how to organize it so that you get the best stuff at the top and the worst at the bottom. They also have figured out how to copy all of that data to thousands of servers around the world. There's a certain technology that goes into organizing all the data, and we use the same thing. We use a certain type of technology into organizing all the parts. We also number them according to how we subdivide them. And eventually you will be able to go online, make your own 3D model or have an architect make a 3D model. They will subdivide all the parts. They'll be cut somewhere in a factory or cut local to the construction site, delivered to the site, and someone will be able to put this together with no skill. And that's the key to this, is reducing skill in construction. So I had 2 students helping me to build this, and you notice all of the parts are straight. We didn't use any plumb bobs or extensive construction tools. We used very simple tools, and everything is primarily straight. With the exception of a few Boeing pieces, everything is primarily straight.
Will they
work? I'm sorry?
Will they work?
The parts? Yeah, well, all wooden parts work. Even today, in any house in the South, all of the parts warp and all of the parts move.
And what happens?
The same thing that happens with a traditional house. They settle into their position. And they don't work that much more after that.
Are these plywood? Are they plywood?
Yes, they are.
And you have too many layers, so the warping is reduced.
Well, the warping is reduced by all the parts being sort of jigsawed together. The real problems with warping are the parts before they're assembled. Before they're assembled, they do have a tendency to warp a lot. And once they're applied, they straighten themselves back out. One other thing you should notice is that we use plastic parts at the bottom, and that's meant for water and drainage. What we wanted to do was do the entire foundation out of plastic, but it turns out it was too expensive. Each one of these pieces of plastic are $200 a sheet versus $60 a sheet for plywood.
So how is it anchored to the ground?
Yeah, so it's anchored with 40 bolts, 43/4-inch bolts. They're held in with epoxy. The bolt was, these pads were poured first.
The pads?
Yeah, the pads. Yeah. And the anchors were installed by the contractor for the project with epoxy. And we just came along and and bolted them in. But the one thing you should notice is that the bolts, we couldn't trust that the bolts would be in the right place. It's the only place that's inaccurate. Every other component or part is within a thousandth of an inch in accuracy. This is the only thing that's maybe an inch off or 2 inches off.
So the pads are supposed to be the foundation.
Yeah, yeah. So if this were a real New Orleans shotgun house, it could, one, withstand a minimum of a 75-mile-an-hour wind. We did structural testing on this with our structural engineer, and he tested this at 140 miles an hour. It survived 140 mile an hour wind with only 4 inches of deflection in the front. So that meant that if a 140 mile an hour wind hit the side of this, the front end would move about 4 inches, which is very good for a house. Most houses can't withstand a 100 mile an hour wind. It could also withstand at least 5,000 pounds of force turning it over, overturning force. It's bolted down so that it would take 5,000 pounds of force to turn it over. And it could withstand that. So the next step in something like this is to put siding on it, turn it into a real house, put a bathroom in it, a kitchen, extend it 50 feet, the length of a real shotgun house, New Orleans shotgun house.
So what is the per square?
The cost?
The cost per square foot.
Okay. Cost per square foot is the wrong way to measure a house. Anyone that's had a house built, the contractor typically starts off with $25, $45 a square foot, always ends up with double that or maybe close to it. But very few people, very few architects and contractors can assure a square foot price. The way we did this, and after I tell you this, we can go inside because it'll make a little more sense. The way we did this was to measure by steps, not by cost per square foot. Steps is a much better measure of cost. That's how they make cars. The automobile industry makes cars. And Toyota was one of the people who pioneered measuring car construction by steps.
Steps in the process of building.
Right. So we know that there are 5,000 parts. We know that how long it takes to put each part on. And we can measure each step, so we can measure the number of days. We could reduce the number of days by reducing the number of steps. So the cost is based on the number of steps and the number of people and the cost of the material. And you could reduce the steps by changing the parts. For example, if I wanted to make one of these panels, instead of making small panels, I would make one large panel. That would reduce the number of steps. If I wanted to, I could reduce the amount of friction between the parts and use screws or something to hold them together. That would reduce the number of steps.
But in essence, the structural integrity of
it could. It could. We still don't completely know. Because a lot of these panels aren't holding the thing up. What's really holding it up are the structural members on the inside, and the panels on the outside keep it from collapsing, shear. So the panels on the outside aren't really, and the inside panels aren't doing anything. They're really just there for visual purposes. They don't really do anything. So if we go inside, I'll show you what I mean by steps.
So what would the cost of putting up this structure?
Well, the cost of this is about $70,000. But the real construction cost would be, I would say, for a house with plumbing and everything, $150,000 at the lowest.
This size?
A little bit larger, with a bathroom. And yeah, the real size. It would cost that at about $150,000.
But I assume if this were mass production, the cost would probably come down.
Dramatically. Because you can also distribute the manufacturing over many, many plants. The traditional methods, like this one, which was made by hand, this person's wedded to the cost per hour per region. If he made this here in Manhattan, it would cost a lot more than in Kansas. Mine can be made anywhere. Right. Right. That would be pretty good. So cost per square foot, this is the billions. No, because it still doesn't fit into, it's still more of an experiment to people. People want something they know will work. And this is too much of a dream for a construction company. Oh, the little pieces. Oh, those blue. Yeah, we left those out because we ran out of time.
I thought it was the top.
Yeah, we left those out. So there are a couple of features. One thing I should tell you, this model took 21 days to construct. We built this with two laser cutters at MIT. Oh, by the way, I should tell you, too, I'm an MIT professor. Sorry, I forgot to give you my background. I'm an MIT professor. I've been teaching in the Department of Architecture for 7 years. I started off there as a master's student in the early 90s under a really great professor, Bill Mitchell, who was the dean of the Media Lab at one point. My education is in computing. I'm more of a computer scientist than I am an architect. But my education is in architecture, and I teach courses for architectural students, and I teach them how to do this at MIT. MIT is traditionally, the Department of Architecture is traditionally 10 years ahead of the industry. CAD was invented at MIT. The CAD is the software that we use to put this together. CAD was invented at MIT back in 1963 by Ivan Sutherland, and CAD became commercialized in the 70s, and is commonplace in the industry of architecture, became commonplace in 1995, 2000. Today, all architects work with CAD, computer modeling. If you ever see an animation of a building, it's usually done by the architect today. It's not an outsourced industry. And laser cutters, the thing that was used to cut this, is new to the industry. Most architectural offices do not have laser cutters. Most architectural offices don't have another device called a 3D printer. And if you look inside, there's a small building inside of this, and that's the model that we started off with. That's a three-dimensional print. And what that is a machine that prints plaster out of plaster in layers, the same way that this house was made, in layers, controlled layers. So most architectural offices do not have 3D printers, but almost all schools of architecture have a laser cutter, and a lot of schools of architecture, I'd say at least half of the schools of architecture in the United States, have three-dimensional printers. So that should tell you that this technology is on its way. And a lot of schools have the machine that I used to cut these parts with. I didn't use my school's machine, but the machine that I typically teach with is called the CNC router that I was explaining before. A lot of schools of architecture have those machines. So the technology I use to put this together is on its way for most schools. And like I said, what was really important about this model was this model took us 21 days to construct. This building took us 22 days to construct. The first time I did this project in 2005, I made a small cabin. And that cabin was 10 foot by 8 foot. It was much smaller than this building. Made exactly the same way. I made a model of the cabin. The model took 3 days. The full building took 4 days to construct. And that's because we measure steps, we don't measure square footage. And if you want to figure out how to do costing, you would do cost per step, not cost per square foot. To put carpeting into this would be another step, not a cost per square foot. You'll get a much more accurate measurement of cost. So because it's new, and it's a new way to think about buildings, I don't have a real price for this structure. There's no way that you can truly price this other than to price the materials, and maybe multiply the number of steps that two or three people would have to go through to put this together. Let's see. And if you look again, if you also look at the numbers on the sides, they correspond with the numbers on the outside of the building.
The number is the 0 to 11.
Yeah, that's actually a good question. That's the grid of the framing. And if you notice, the grid is not an even grid, which is another step. So with modern architecture, modernism is all about the grid, that everything builds off of a grid, XYZ grid. The floor plates are the Z-axis, and you have a grid in an X and a Y direction. And the grid is typically even in a traditional office building. If you look across the street at any of these office buildings, the grid is even in plan. Here, the grid is completely uneven. If you notice, there are certain areas where the grid is really close together, and in other areas, it's far apart. And that's so that you can put material where you need it, not have redundant amounts of material just doing nothing. The structure is tighter together where the piers are, and farther apart at the middle of the span between the piers.
So the space then relates to kind of the the posts in the foundation.
That's right. And because it's digital, I can put this, I can space it any way I want. I don't have to go 1 foot, 5 foot. Inches and feet mean nothing. We never made a drawing of this. If you notice, you will never see a floor plan anywhere. We never made a drawing. We never had a floor plan. We never used a tape measure for any of this. We put all of this together by just following the numbers, which again saves tremendous amounts of time and construction. So if you, I'm sorry.
Is there a reason why the between portion has the signs and cutouts and it has that part of the structure of the model? Or?
Yes. You don't want an even set of parts across. You mean just the outside of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want an even set of parts. You want an uneven set of parts to so that nothing, there's no seam anywhere, if that's what you mean.
Well, like, why these are kind of cut out the way they are.
Which ones? You're talking about
the plexiglass.
Oh, the plexiglass. I'm sorry. Oh, the plexiglass. Yeah, it's cut so that we could put the whole thing together in a couple of parts with a couple of, in a couple of steps. There's no real, but actually it is structural. I mean, it holds itself up. But also one thing you notice is this part here, which is really fascinating, when you bang it on, it has to be right on the stud, the center of the, so that this way when you bang it on, it doesn't fall through. There are all sorts of little pieces of geometry so that when you put it together, the whole thing holds up. But this, I would say this glass case is not a good example of the way we would build the structure on the inside or the care that we took with the structure on the inside.
If you were to design this with the shingling on the outside, that also be done with your CAD, to the routine of the storyboard, you wouldn't do it in traditional shingling?
No, I would not. The goal is to try and do sort of what cars do, car body, to have very large components that are screwed on. It could look like traditional shingling, but you want very large panels and very large parts, and they're screwed on or snapped on. Shingling takes up a majority of time in pre-manufactured housing. One thing I should tell you, if you ever look at, there's sort of three forms of traditional housing. Most people don't know this. In pre-manufactured housing, there's manufactured housing, and that's trailers. There is box construction. You'll see a big box driving down the street. And then there's panelized construction, panels that are assembled on site, usually between posts. And in the show, the tower, the Karen Timberlake, is a good example of box construction delivered on the back of a truck in a box. Panelized construction is a Systems 3 house. And then the one in the middle, the compact house, is a really good example of manufactured housing, a trailer. This is a little bit different. It doesn't use or require any of the other traditional tools. Like, you don't need a crane. All of those need cranes. And as far as the way it would be delivered, the real way it's supposed to be delivered is the machine would be set up right there, which is what we wanted to do for the show. But unfortunately, we couldn't because of New York City building codes. I can't remember what the code was, but we couldn't build with the machine on site. But you would cut all the parts on site, put them together, as many as you can cut in a day. You would never, ever need a factory. I could set up a tent like the one over as you walked in, put the machine under the tent, and cut all the parts right there.
How large is the machine?
It's 4x8. Four feet by eight feet, almost about the size of this table.
But how large are the sheets that you're
Four
cutting?
Foot by eight. The machine is as large as the part, as a piece that I'm cutting. I'm sorry, the machine's about 4'6", 4'8", by 8'6", 8'7".
What do you call these things?
Yeah, these are called jacks.
Jacks?
Jacks, yeah, and they started off as this piece here in the four-corner jack. You need the jacks to keep the parts, to keep making a rigid structure. If I took the jacks out and I pushed on the top of it, you would see it creep and bend. Those resist tensile stress. You'd have a very hard time pulling these apart. One other thing I should tell you, the architectural features of this, the blue floor. Does anybody know what the blue floor is for? Oh, you beat me to it. Wait.
It's written up
on the other side. What did it say? Yes, okay. Yeah, so we found out from a number of people who lived... In fact, one of the students that worked on this is from New Orleans, when I first started, and he had explained to me that there are big problems with ghosts, and they use these blue floors to reflect the sky, and it's supposed to scare away ghosts.
In the daytime, the ghosts don't come out. So if you have blue, that is a sign that it's daytime.
Right.
And so the ghosts won't come. Day or night.
Exactly. So this floor, I should tell you, too, I'm sure you probably read it on the wall, is a pattern that was a computer script. You can write little computer programs that will generate patterns. And those patterns can be anything from a bunch of squares to triangles. And this student made a computer script that made circular patterns, circular shapes. And the variables for his script were New Orleans zip code addresses. So if he put in any other zip code address, it would give you a different pattern.
So what was the initial inspiration? Puzzles, records,
for the project?
Yeah.
No, the original inspiration... I mean for the design of the building? The Orleans?
The process of how you approach the building in terms of not using nails and screws.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the process is you cannot change the cost of construction by changing materials or changing labor. You can only change the cost of materials by the cost of construction by changing the process. Pre-manufactured housing is still done by traditional methods, cutting, measuring. And one great thing about computers, they already give you a measurement. Once you make a CAD drawing, you already have a measurement. If I were to take a tape measure and start measuring again, I would be doing the same thing twice. So I already have the measurement for this. The machines do the cutting. I don't have to do any cutting. The machines can do all the cutting. The only thing I have to do is assembly. And the inspiration for this and the way that we came up with this idea was looking at that 3D printer. That little 3D print in the middle, what makes it so interesting is you make a CAD model, you send it to this machine, you come back the next day, you put your hand in the machine, and out comes this model with no work. And that's because the computer model does the measuring, the machine does all of the manufacturing of the layers, and it also assembles each layer together. So I don't do that much work other than to make the model. And my hope with a building like this is that I don't have to do any of the cutting. I could send my files to a manufacturer. They will cut out all of these parts. They will deliver them to the job site. And I could pay somebody $5 an hour or $10 an hour to put my house together.
So why did you choose a New Orleans shotgun?
House, yeah.
Yeah,
I chose this because it was the right time to do it. In architecture schools, right after the storm, everybody was doing a New Orleans studio. And I said, within 3 years, those will all go away, and we will be right back to studying high-end architecture. And I wanted to keep the thoughts of New Orleans in mind, that it's an ongoing problem. It's not because of the storm. And there were two real good reasons. One was New Orleans. The other one was there are very few African-American icons in architectural history. The shotgun house is goes back in American history, back to slavery. It's one of the few icons that go back to the plantation and some of the other methods, design methods that people brought over from Africa and some of the tribes. The origins of the shotgun house are said to be called the Shogun house, which is a Nigerian form of housing style. But also, it's just a beautiful style of house. It's hard to make this type of ornamentation with traditional methods, and it's just shotgun houses are absolutely gorgeous pieces of design. Very few people talk about them. They're really intricate and amazing.
So is it really a cost factor that you wouldn't have machine assembly in the model?
You mean the physical, the building?
No, I mean the model of...
The real building?
Of the construction, of your whole idea. Because I know in architecture they've talked about machine assembly, machines doing everything. But
yeah.
There, it seems to be a cost factor that humans would put it together.
It's because it's complicated. It's so complicated to put a structure together. If you put the structure together as evenly, like if I take that 3D printout and I drop it on the floor, it'll smash. if I take this building, the whole structure, I could throw it out the window and it probably won't break. And that's because there's so many uneven parts. There are very few copied parts. Most of the parts are different shapes and different lengths. And that's to make it strong like a basket. If you take a basket, you try to pull it apart or your hair or tangled up, it's very hard. It's because they're all uneven lengths and they're weaved together in different ways. It's hard to get a machine to do that. So it's hard to get a machine to assemble something like this.
But a traditional shotgun house has three
doors. Yeah, the traditional ones do have, they have three doors and two doors. They don't have two sets of staircase. Well, some of them do, but usually the ones that have two sets of staircase also have, what is it, two and two. They don't have the, but I set this up like this so that, for the show, so people can walk in and walk back around. Yeah, I call it ornamentation.
Okay.
Or just a simple ornamentation. One other thing I should tell you that makes the ornamentation difficult, good ornamentation is not about the shape of the ornamentation, it's about the amount of light that's shadow that's cast by the ornamentation. So the ornamentation always has to be made in layers, or it has to be made in real 3D. And it was very difficult to work in 3D with these machines. So we layer them as 2D shapes. When the sun comes out and you look at the top, the crescent up at the top, you'll see it's like these very nice layers of shadows cast on each layer.
Tell us a little about the ceiling.
Yeah, so that's a good question. Okay, so the ceiling, again, they're parts put together by friction. Relative friction. In this case, when we push the parts on, the slots are bigger than the ones on the walls. Those are called ears, elephant ears that hold these together, keep the panels from falling down.
And they're all plastic.
And the keys are made of plastic. So what we did was the big pieces at the corners that are cut out of plastic, we took all the negative area, and we used them to make the little pins that hold the ceiling up. And we needed the two beams in the middle to keep the sides from blowing out.
What about the heating or air conditioning?
How does that work in a building like this? Well, it doesn't work in a building like this because this is just an exhibit. If we were to do this again, there's so many different ways you can do this. And if you ever look at what's called worm board is where you have tubes of water, hot water, that run through the floor. You can lift up the plywood floor and you see worm board. Worm board was made with these machines.
Radiant heat.
It was made with these machines. We would do the same thing. We would take this floor pattern, not the pattern, but we would take the floor panels, route them out, and you could very easily put in radiant heat into the floors. You could also put in electrical conduits by routing out the areas. It would be in another area. There's so many things you could do with it working this way. We could build in special areas for it. We could localize it, which you really want to do. You want to localize all the heating and controls so that each room has its own control. There's just a lot more we can do with a system like this.
These would also be colored, right?
Yeah.
Keeps the roof from separating in a heavy wind.
Wait, collar ties?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean like these?
To my house.
You mean the tie that goes across?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly the same thing. Yeah, it is. And they're usually made out of steel or something that works in tension.
My insurance company said I had to put collar ties on the roof in order to continue the insurance when storms started becoming, nor'easters
right.
started becoming very prevalent in this area.
Do you have a long room or a big room?
It's not terribly long, but it's they were just being very conservative.
Yeah.
Cautious.
Yeah, and you should be. Yeah, I can understand why.
So our house is actually near the ocean on Long Island.
Oh.
And we had a number of those nor'easters
that
came through a while ago and created a lot of trouble for a lot of buildings.
Yeah, I can understand why. One last thing I should tell you, all of the components in the building were made by the machine. Doors, windows, everything. The only bolt that we have in here is what's holding the floor down. And it's the only thing that we purchased from the store, the little bolts and stuff, door handles. In fact, we were trying to make the door handles with our machines as well, but we ran out of time.
How closely are those compared to the computer machines. Can every architectural firm purchase one?
They can, but the big machines architects don't use. That's for the manufacturers. The machine was, when I first started, I purchased the machine for my lab group, and the machine was $50,000. The machines I used for this one were $12,000. So they've gone down from $50,000 5 years ago to $12,000 or $10,000 today. And the company sells machines just because they're so cheap. They sell them just to do one function. So they have IKEA buys a number of these machines, and they only use them to cut one thing, maybe a door panel or parts of a door panel. But eventually the machines will go down to $2,000, $3,000. They're very, very cheap and inexpensive to make. Yeah. So now I'm working with a group called Preservation Resource Center. And they have 25 pieces of property. They're one of the groups that are slated to get 2,000 pieces of property in the next 20 years, or 10 years, actually. And I've been working with them to try and build one of their examples, one of their approved houses. The problems that people have in New Orleans is you could buy a set of floor plans and elevations from these groups, but it's very hard to get it built. Very, very difficult. So what we're hoping to do is digitize one of their examples just like this, give them the files, and they could either set up a fabrication facility there, or they could send the files somewhere else and someone can fabricate them and deliver them back to the homeowner's site.
Can you get the group, you know, Habitat?
For Humanities?
For Humanities, you know, I have
yeah.
Volunteers.
Once a project is underway, and it's sort of all the materials are there, I think that's possible. The problem with Habitat for Humanity is that they really work with traditional methods. They want to hire traditional contractors, and that's the thing I'm trying to get away from. You want to get local people to do this sort of thing. You want to get people who are not unskilled, but people who have... Yeah, like a barn raising. Exactly, just like a barn raising.
So finishing work. Finishing work at the site, the carpentry and the plumbing and the electrical would have to be done by license.
Well, the carpentry doesn't have to. That's the whole point of, if you look at the ornamentation here or up there, it's made by the same machine.
Well, I guess wall paneling, the inside wainscoting.
You can make all that by with the machine. That's the part that's the most expensive and the hardest to make, is the finishes. Kitchen cabinets are made by these machines. That's the whole point of this. Yeah, that's the whole point of this. People have figured out how to use these machines for everything but the structure.
What do you think it will reduce the number of people that would be necessary to build houses? Would it create some unemployment for traditional carpenters?
No, it's just the opposite.
It
can create, one, you need people to cut the parts. Two, you need people to make the geometry for the parts. And today, if you go to any small town, the local carpenter, the person who has enough money to build a nice house, the five or six carpenters are completely booked up. It's very hard to get a carpenter in small towns today. Most people go into other fields. They don't go into carpentry. There are very few people who learn carpentry. And actually, in construction, most people's first job in the United States, either coming as immigrant labor or out of prison, is construction, which means that you have a huge labor pool of unskilled workers or new skilled workers, people who are just learning that trade.
But easily use the rubber balance to knock this together.
Exactly.
What are the unions doing? Aren't they going to be opposed to this?
That's always a possibility, and that would be a good thing. But what could also happen is the union, because the carpenters now have adapted these machines. The carpenters know that there's a lot of laborious cutting they have to do for cabinets and parts, and they now send a lot of files, make files, and send them to CNC companies to cut parts. The carpentry, if you look up the Carpenters Union website, you'll see they have these they incorporate these machines into their work.
I think an old-fashioned carpenter.
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
right.
Hands.
Yeah, well, that's just like typing with a typewriter. Those are gone. I would never be able to get my 14-year-old to cut anything with a saw. I could definitely get him to work these machines.
Dial a telephone.
Oh, he doesn't know what that means. It's just part of our time. Computers run a lot of things, and it's safer.
I use rubber bands.
Oh!
I'm a dial telephone.
And they still function. They're over 50 years old.
Wow.
And they work.
Wow.
So, in theory, this you could produce housing fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm. Because you can't scale the number of workers, you could always buy more machines. And one person can operate 5 machines at one time. It takes 20 minutes to cut each one of these boards. As the board's cutting, you can move over to the other machine and load the other machine, load another machine. So easily, one person can operate 5 boards in a day, 5 boards in 20 minutes. You could cut at least half of this in about a week.
I'm thinking that the house we live in is 60 years old.
Uh-huh.
It's poured concrete. It was a post-World War II attempt by the builder. He thought he was going to put up 500 houses because he was going to do what was appropriate at that time, the equivalent of what you're doing now. He set up a cement mixing area, and his idea was he was going to put up the frame, mix the cement, pour. Set up the frame, mix the cement, pour. All going right down the line. Well, he went bankrupt after about 25 of them, but...
Wow.
But it was the concept that he could build a lot of houses quickly when there was a housing need in this country.
Well, we still have the same need. In New Orleans, they lost 109,000 houses.
Right, but now you have different techniques.
You have much better techniques. Once I have the file for this, I can make an identical copy of this tomorrow. I don't need the same carpenters to make the next building.
Yeah.
You've taken the intelligence part out of, not this intelligence, the specialty.
Right, the specialty.
Yeah, the specialty out of the hands of the people, and you've put it into the machines,
right.
And that's what will reduce the cost.
Can you speak briefly on the challenges of bringing this into the market?
The market, yeah. Yeah, the first challenge is getting people past the stigma of cutting parts by hand. That's the first thing. It's very hard to get people past hand cutting and hand construction and to mechanize construction. The second challenge is the computer part. It takes a long time to make the computer data for this. And that is the biggest challenge, is the data generation.
I know this has been a research project, but approximately how long has it taken?
To make the data for this? From start to finish, it could take up to a month to make the data. But that's not too bad. A small house this size with a traditional architect, it would take them about a month to make drawings, hand drawings. So the data is being reused. The last challenge is, I think, getting the average person into this, getting people to buy these types of homes and accept it. I think it's just like email. It took a long time for people to accept email as a form of communication.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the same thing.
Yeah, and that's really interesting, like how we influence. I'm interested in how we might do that.
Yeah.
I
don't think that I'm going to be the person that's going to do it. I think some other person who's in the industry will start doing it. And then all of a sudden somebody will say, oh, this is the same thing this guy at MIT was doing, and then people will get used to it. The people who invented email and all that stuff are not the people who have really profited from it.
Can you use the same data generator for this house and other structures?
Yeah, I can.
You can, right?
Oh, yes.
So it'll be faster.
Oh, yeah. I can take my computer model that I use for this, add another piece of data onto the back.
Yeah.
And I can make all different. And the whole thing is, I can make every single copy different. There will be none the same. No, I haven't. But if you think of the principles of this, I can measure the structural integrity of this on the computer. If I built a 5-story, 8-story building, I can measure it. And I could put as much material in as I need to.
Thickness.
Yes, it's just thickness and spacing between the ribs and the joists.
So these walls are as thick as the
outside.
Foundations.
Yes, that's right. 3/4 of an inch. But they don't need to be this thick.
Oh,
they can be.
I mean the overall.
Oh, the overall. Oh, is 8 inches in thickness from face to face.
Yeah.
But that's empty space that you have. Which
right.
Why? Well, does that allow for insulation?
No, it's really for structure. The way you want to insulate a building, any building, is to put the insulation on the outside of the building. The problem with that is you end up with 2 inches of insulation out here, and then you put a piece of shingle on top. You have to use a long nail to get back to this. And what I'm trying to do, and actually if we go to the outside, I could show you this, that can sort of conclude with this part. This outside surface is the real invention in this project. So I published a paper that's in a journal about 3 years ago now, called Automation in Construction. And that explains the sort of algorithmic steps that I went through to generate all the data for the gray parts of the building. So anyone can read that paper and copy what I did. The part that's new is the white part. All of the white components are a third layer from the center. So that means that I figured out how to not just make a sandwich of parts with plywood, I've also figured out how to layer in another direction.